नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Next name in Vishnu Sahasranam is Vishva Dakshina. And there are many well-known names of the Supreme Lord, such as Krishna and Govinda. And many names in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, which are well-known words, but not well-known as names of the Lord. It's well accepted in the context, except for people who know Vishnu Sahasranama. There are a few of such names in the next verse, such as Vistara. It's a common word, but it's not usually thought of as a name of Vishnu. Do you know that word, Vistara? From Tamil? Means spread out, wide. Another one, Pramanam. Common word, the name of Vishnu, coming up in the next verse. Artha, Anartha. These are common words in Vaishnava philosophy, and so on. Sometimes there are words which are joined together, or a word, well, in the next verse also, Mahadhanaha, which means great wealth. Well, it's really one word with an intensifier or qualifier at the beginning. But this Vishva Dakshinaha, it is a combination of two common words. Vishva is a very common word. Dakshina is a common word, which means an offering, religious offering. Or it also means to the right direction. But when we put the two words together, it needs explaining. Otherwise, what does it mean? It's not obvious what it means. Vishva Dakshina. That means right of the universe, or what does it mean? Well, the acharyas explain that. The first explanation that Parashara Bhattar gives is that he gives his favor to everyone. He's kind to everyone in the universe. So dakshina, the sense of giving. So he gives himself to everyone. And he, at least he's ready to, if everyone's ready to take. He gives the example of the Trivikram avatar, Vamanadeva, who gave the darshan of his lotus feet to both the devotees and the demons, and mostly the demons. They may not have been very happy to see his lotus feet rising above them, but he gave it anyway. It's a nice example. You never thought of that. I never thought of that before. And also another meaning is his. He gives forgiveness. Enemies, they may be there, but if they submit themselves to him, he'll forgive them. A famous example is Vibhishana. In the beginning of the war, he was on Ravana's side. He wasn't with Ravana in spirit, but he was on his side. But eventually he came over to Rama's side, and Rama immediately accepted him against the advice of his advisors, his ministers and everyone else, that you can't trust. You can't trust an enemy, and especially these Rakshasas. But Rama, he thought, well, if he's come, if he's sincere, then we should accept him, that's all. Overriding worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom is You should be very careful if an enemy comes in the form of a friend. Has he really given up his enmity? Can't trust him immediately. So that makes sense in a worldly sense, but Rama, he overrode that, accepting the devotion of Vibhishana. Of course, Rama is in everyone's heart, so he knows everyone's motive. So he's playing the part of a human, but we don't know the motive of everyone. But we see that Srila Prabhupada consistently was ready to accept the devotional attitude or devotional propensity of a person, even if it was very little and was present amid many materialistic motivations also. As Srila Prabhupada said, we should, if we see a spark of devotion in someone, we should fan it. Then, another meaning that Parashara Bhatta gives, this series of names he's specifically explaining in terms of Kalki Avatar. So, after Kalki Avatar destroys all the demons at the end of Kali Yuga, he will perform an Ashvamedha Yajna, and as Dakshina, he will give the whole earth to the priests. Quoting from Shastra in this regard. Then another meaning, Dakshina, can be explained also as similar to the word Daksha. We just had the name Daksha just came up, which is described mainly as being very quick in doing things, and here is described as Vishveshu Karmasu. Vishva is described as meaning all activities, so he's very proficient in everything. So any expertise that anyone may have comes from him. Paurashang Rishu, I am the manliness in man. Tejas Vinamaham, I am the power of the powerful. Balang Balavatang Chaham, I am the power of the powerful. So any expertise that anyone may have comes from Krishna. He is the ultimate manager. We like to study, well, I don't know, some people like to study management secrets, how to manage properly. The best management course is to study Vishnu, how he's managing. You may say, well, that's different because we're humans and we're limited and he's unlimited. But actually, in Krishna consciousness, if we are Krishna conscious, that is the first qualification for being a manager in Krishna consciousness. One may be very expert in psychological manipulation of others and balancing the account books and so many affairs which are also required in management. But in Krishna consciousness, the prime principle of management is to be Krishna conscious, to do everything for Krishna's pleasure. And then others who want to be in Krishna consciousness will also tend to cooperate with that by coercion or incitement, in offering inducements. One can attempt to manage others, and that may be successful to some extent, and that may be required to some extent. As I just mentioned, Srila Prabhupada would try to fan a little spark of Krishna consciousness if he saw it in a person who otherwise was very materialistic. So in such a person, we may also appeal to their materialistic side, dovetail, this word Srila Prabhupada often used, dovetail their materialistic propensities in the service of Krishna. But those who are going to take a leadership role in Krishna consciousness should take shelter of the supreme leader, the supreme expert in everything. And by being conscious of him, then even if one is not the most expert manager from the materialistic point, from the worldly sense, then Krishna will help. That is the perfection of management. Of course, if someone is Krishna conscious but totally scatterbrained, and they probably wouldn't make the best manager. I wouldn't make Vamsidas Babaji a temple president. He wouldn't become a temple president. He probably couldn't even conceive of what it means to be a temple president. A Madhyamadhikari would be better. And then another similar meaning. Yeah, so is that whatever efficiency we see in anyone is an expression of him. Whenever we see anything, anyone's very skillful in doing something, we should know that that comes from him. So what does Baladev Vidyabhushan say about this? Vishvadakshina, he gives himself to his devotees, I believe. So. Yeah, he can to his devotee, he can give the entire world, and even himself, which is much more than the world. Of course, the first name in Vishnu Sahasranam is Vishva. So he is the Vishva, he is the universe. So he can give himself to his devotee. Atma Prajanto Prasad. Ishure Shabhav Naloi Bhaktir Aparad. Alpo Seva Bahumane Atma Prajanto Prasad. Chaitanya Charitamrita has stated that is the very nature of Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, that he doesn't take the offenses of his devotees very seriously, but he takes even a little service that they do very seriously. And in reciprocation, he's willing to give his very self to them. That one verse is enough reason to give up all Mayavad and Buddhism and anything else, or materialism. If you have a little appreciation of Krishna, which we're supposed to have. So the next name, Vistara, I just mentioned that. Vistar means widely spread. Widely spread out. Same in Tamil, widely spread out. So Krishna is spread in everything. He's widely spread. He's also personalized. He's not just spread everywhere. We have to take all the names altogether. If we say, well, he's spread in everything, then we think that he's become very thin. But even though he's spread everywhere and in everything, he's fully conscious, complete, everywhere, because he's not material. He doesn't become thinner and thinner. If you have a block and you crush it so that it spreads out, then it'll no longer be a block. It will lose its height and width, height and length. It'll only have width. But Krishna's not like that. He spreads out, but he doesn't lose any potency in doing so. He's spread out in everything. He also spreads the knowledge of the Vedas. He also spreads his love his pastimes. Ananda chinmaya rasatmataya manasuya praninam pratipalam smaritam upaita lilayatena bhuvanani jayatya jasram govinda madhi purusham tamaham bhajami. His blissful spiritual pastimes are always reflected in the heart of his devotees, and his pastimes which are going on continually. And by his pastimes, he conquers the whole world. He comes as Kalki. That's one way of conquering the world. But actually, by performing his pastimes, he demonstrates the utter insignificance of everything that is in the world, except he and everything that is conceived of in relationship with him. He also expands to contain everything. At the time of the devastation, pralayam, when he showed his Vishvarupa to Arjuna, Krishna was standing on the chariot, but he demonstrated his form spread everywhere. So in the various ways this can be understood. Baladev. He says that he engages in many different loving relationships with his devotees. Krishna, expands himself into many forms and reciprocates differently with different devotees. So in that sense, he may be considered spread out. As in Dwaraka, one Krishna appeared in 16,108 forms. In 16,108 palaces, with 16,108 queens. And 161,080 sons. He had 10 sons by each wife. And 16,108 daughters. And then in each palace he would have had so many servants. So he spreads himself out. And then again, he comes as one. When he goes out into the to meet all the elders of Dwaraka city, he goes to the assembly hall there. Then all the 16,108 forms come out, and they all again become as one form of Krishna. So he can expand, and then again become one. But this is inconceivable. Duryodhana wanted to catch Krishna, to tie him up, and in this way mortify the Pandavas, so that they would become so depressed because Krishna is their life. So if Krishna was tied up, then captured, then they'd lose all will to fight. So he thought. He might have thought that they would just attack and release Krishna. But anyway, he couldn't catch Krishna. Because when he sent men to catch Krishna, then Krishna, they went to see him, and he was here, and he was here, and he was there, and he was there. So many forms of Krishna. So if you want to tie up one, and then how are you going to tie them all up? Devotee captures Krishna. Krishna is spread everywhere, but he's captured in the heart of his devotee. This is the secret of devotional service. Oh yeah, he also manifests as the Prajapatis who expand the population of the universe. The Vishwarupa is infinite faces, infinite eyes, infinite arms, infinite weapons. All the demigods, the sun and the moon, no top, middle or bottom. This is Vistara, well spread out. The next name is Stavara Sthanuhu. And the commentators take this as one name, although Baladev Vidyabhushan takes it as two names. Sthavara means not moving. These terms, chala achala, these terms come up. Another, a synonym of chala achala, moving and non-moving, referring to living beings and entities within the universe, is sthavara jangama, which just ran the other way. It means non-moving and moving. So sthavara means still, and sthanuhu means firm, fixed. So they're almost the same word. Baladev, but they're given together as one name, or Baladev Vidyabhushan gives them as two names. Stavara, he's also... Baladev gives the meaning that he restored the earth to a peaceful condition by removing the unnecessary armies of the demoniac king. So Stavara gives the sense of being still, gives the sense of being peaceful. The Kshatriya's job is to maintain the peace, if necessary, by killing. It seems contradictory to make peace by killing, because killing means not very peaceful, but sometimes that is required. So there can be peace, the non-peaceful elements have to be removed. I'm just trying to remember, in England, the police, there's a word for that, something. I can't remember, old, it's a bit out of date now. Maintainers of the peace or something like that. Then Sthanu, he reflects probably not knowing that Parashabhata, he gives these names in relation to Kalki. So Sthanu, he appears at the end of Kali Yuga as Lord Kalki to re-establish the Vedic principles. So that was a meaning that Parashabhata gave for the previous name, for Vistara, in relationship to Kalki avatar, that after destroying all the demoniac persons at the end of the Kali Yuga, he spreads the knowledge of the Vedas to re-establish the Satya Yuga. So Baladev Vidyabhushan gives this same meaning to the word sthanu. So the two words joined together, firm and motionless. So this name is given by Parashabhata, that after establishing, making firm dharma at the beginning of the Kriti Yuga, Satya Yuga, then Kalki is peaceful. Then he's no longer killing. The killing only goes on as long as required. And then he establishes dharma. And he in whom, another meaning, he in whom the rest, the earth, etc., rest, everything rests in him. Or, he is still and moving things, everything else is moving. Jagat, yogat chatiti jagat. That which moves is the world. But the unmoving, eternal, fixed, subtle principle behind everything, that is Brahma, which is Krishna. So Krishna, he's not involved in this material world. He's Vriksham Iva Stabdha. He's just like a tree. He's motionless. He sees the world going on, but he's at the same time he's not involved, at the same time he makes everything possible within this world, but he's aloof from it all. Then everything in this world is constantly changing, but he is unchanging. So in this way.
Then the next word, or the next name, is a very important word in Vedic understanding. The name is Pramanam. So a very important word. Pramana means that which is measured, or that which measures, that which is the authority, that which is proof, evidence, that which is standard, that which is the correct understanding. So this word is, it's very important, because the Vedic approach to understanding reality is to accept Veda Pramana. Veda is Pramana. For the persons who don't accept Veda as Pramana, well, they might accept the Bible as Pramana, but they've had a lot of problems in doing so. When they attempt to describe the condition of this world according to the descriptions of the Bible, they run into a lot of problems. It's like the Lord created the world in 6 days and all this kind of thing. Or people may take the Quran as evidence. For persons who don't accept the authority of Scripture, they have a lot of problem with this, because it's very difficult to establish, because they don't have any pramana, they don't have any established authoritative corpus of authority, therefore all they can do is speculate. They can't do anything else. That's why in Western or materialistic philosophy, as I've said many times, that you can go on your whole life and be the most brilliant philosopher, but according to that system of philosophy, even the most brilliant philosopher or student of philosophy, at the end of his life, he'd have to say that he doesn't know anything with certainty any more than when he started off his philosophy, his philosophical speculation. Whereas Vedic philosophy accepts as axiomatic Veda Pramana, especially Shruti Pramana. Pramana Shiromani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. Svata Pramana, it's self-evident. So that is Krishna. He's non-different from the Vedas. And non-different from the Vedas in as much as the Vedas describe Him. So, knowledge and the knowable are different and non-different. Just like if I say, this cow is black. So the knowledge that the cow is black is inseparable from the entity of the cow. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's inseparable. And in that sense, non-different. So Krishna is Pramana, and what he says, that is the ultimate Pramana. Yasvayam padmanabhasya mukha padmat vinistrita. The Gita, Bhagavad Gita, is accepted as the topmost pramana, Vedic evidence, because it comes from the mouth, directly from the mouth of Padmanabha, Krishna. Therefore, it's the topmost evidence. Even within there, Krishna says, this is my opinion. Matir matam. Or sometimes he quotes Rishibhya Chandobhi. What is that? Rishibhya, what is that verse? Rishibhya Chand. What is that verse? Beginning of the 13th chapter? Anyone? No one knows this verse. Look it up. Rishibhya Bahuda Gitam Chandobhya Vivithai Pritak Brahma Sutra Padais Chaiva Hetu Madhya Vinishchitam. That's the verse. So Krishna says that this knowledge that I'm going to give, that is described in various ways by various rishis and various chandas, which means the Vedic hymns, and in the Brahma Sutra. In all these sources, the subject of the ultimate cause is definitely delineated. So Krishna refers to the authority of the rishis and the shastras, but ultimately he is the authority. So this is very important to understand that there's one ancient Greek philosopher made a statement which has been profoundly influential in Western philosophy, that man is the measure of all things. Wrong. 0 out of 10. Failure. Wrong. You may think you're the measure of all things, but Krishna is the measure of all things. The attempt of man to measure everything, that is his maya, his illusion. Mapiyate yati maya. The very attempt to measure everything is illusion. So in this world, we require to differentiate between what is right, what is wrong, what is factual and what is illusory, what is true and what is false. But we ultimately we cannot ascertain it. We can ascertain it by resort to the Vedas, which means resort to Krishna. Krishna gives the Vedas so that we can understand all these points. Of course, the Vedas may be very subtle also. And the nature of this world is very complex. So we need a good guide to guide us through the Vedic knowledge. Because even sometimes, muhyanti yat surayaha, even the great saintly persons, they may also be bewildered by Krishna. There is the anecdote described in the 11th canto, or is it the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, of the four great rishis, Sanak, Sanatan, Sananda, and Sanat, who are contemplating on the nature of reality incessantly, but then something went, oh, what happened? In the course of their deep meditation on the nature of reality, they came across, in their minds, they came across a philosophical conundrum which they could not solve. So they went to Lord Brahma and asked him. They said that, and it's a very important question because it concerns the nature of liberation. They're meditating for the sake of liberation. But they said that, all right, so liberation means to withdraw the senses from the sense objects. But the senses and the sense objects are intimately connected. The senses have no meaning unless they're interacting with the sense objects. And the sense objects, they are meant for perception by the senses. So considering the very intimate relationship between the sense and the sense object, in other words, you see something, well, you see it. You can't stop seeing it. Or if you hear something, you can't stop hearing it. So how can we disentangle the senses from the sense objects? Without that, there's no question of liberation. So they questioned this to Lord Brahma, who also had a philosophical nervous breakdown on hearing that. He couldn't work it out either. Ooh, never thought of that one before. He also got confused. And then they saw a swan in their midst. That's pronounced swan in Indian English. In English, it's pronounced swan. Big hungsa. And he gave them the answer, which is more or less, he is Vishnu, actually. You forgot about me. You're thinking about how to get liberated, disentangling the senses from the sense objects. But you have to think of me. And the senses have to be engaged in me. And then everything is possible. So by your own effort, it's not possible. It's very, very important because the Mayavadis, how are they going to disentangle their senses from their sense objects? It's not possible. But when Sivan Mukhe Hijivado, when the senses are engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord, then the senses are properly. The can't be disengaged. The senses can't be turned off, but they have to be concentrated on the proper objects of the senses. If we think that the senses are meant for interacting with the mundane sense objects, well, that's a big mistake. They're meant for interacting in the service of the Lord of the senses. So he is the ultimate authority. What Krishna says is a fact that we should accept. This also has many, many important ramifications, that Shastra is Pramana. It is evidence. And even if it seems to contradict what we perceive through our senses, or what is commonly accepted as being knowledge, then we should accept Shastra as being correct. This is a major point which Srila Prabhupada always stressed. He need not have stressed it. It would have made life much easier for all of us. If he hadn't said that, well, the so-called astronauts could not have gone to the moon because it's too far away for them to go to. It would be easier for us if he hadn't presented Shastra as being literal. There are elephants in the different directions holding up the universe. This might seem like some antiquated, mythical cosmology dreamed up by people who didn't have telescopes. Srila Prabhupada presented it as factual. And that is the and if we deny that, then we get, you know, then it's like if you have a sweater and there's one piece of wool loose and you pull it out, you say, I'll pull that out, then it won't look, but then more comes out. Then you pull some more and you go on pulling, the whole thing comes out. So the whole thing comes to pieces. It's all interrelated. We say, well, we don't really. Everyone knows that the rain comes from the evaporation of seawater, principally seawater, maybe other water also in rivers and lakes, for instance, which goes in clouds, and then when there's the clouds blow around here and there, and when there's some low pressure, then starts to rain, as it may do here today. Signs of that. So we don't have to believe in Indra sending the rain and all. But then the Govardhan Leela, well, then you have to throw that out because that's all based on Indra coming and sending the rain clouds. So tough. You got it. It's all or nothing. You can't pick and choose in Shastra understanding. So that's another very important point. It's a major point which requires much philosophical and scientific investigation, but the basic principle is that we accept Shastra as Praman because Shastra is non-different from Krishna. Then Bijam Avyayam, as this is the next name. This also comes in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna describes himself as Bijam Avyayam. Bija means seed and Avyaya means imperishable, which is not possible. Oh, wait a minute, Pramana. What does Baladev Vidyabhushan say? Pramana, Baladev Vidyabhushan, he often gives meaning different to the other commentators. It seems he didn't consult the other commentators, and no harm in that. He gives the meaning that he always speaks the truth. So, Bijam Avyayam. Baladev gives the same meaning. He is the imperishable seed of all existence. Now, this is very difficult for us to imagine, because if we take a seed and it sprouts, then as soon as it starts to sprout, it's no longer a seed. Then it's called a sprout. And the sprout turns into a tree or whatever. And there are different words for it. Bija means seed. Ankur means a sprout. And then it becomes a tree. So, if the very nature of a seed is that it expands, vistara, into something much bigger. But then it's no longer a seed. The same, the tree will give rise to, or will produce fruits in which there are seeds. Now, when we just think about things like this, then the evolutionary theory just seems completely ridiculous. How does this happen? By evolution. The seed grows into a tree which gives fruit, and in each fruit there are more seeds. It's too complex to explain by evolutionary theory. I mean, even one seed is too complex. What to speak of this becoming a tree and giving fruit, which, and then the different kinds of fruit, many of them are eaten by humans or monkeys or other animals, and this way the seeds get spread here and there. The seed of the peepal tree is eaten by birds, then it gestates within the stomach of the bird due to the heat, then it's passed out and it gets spread here and there. How does this happen by evolution? That's unique. That, as far as I know, that's the only one which it actually gestates in the stomach of the within the body of the bird. But there are many other seeds which are eaten by different. Some seeds, like mango, then no one eats it. They just throw it here and there, and then the mango tree comes up. But there are many seeds which get eaten and then passed out, and then they germinate. But anyway, the point is that Krishna, even though from him everything emanates, but he remains the same. And he can go on giving birth to innumerable universes and everything within it. And he doesn't become diminished or transformed in doing so. Parashabhata says that dharma grows again and again from him at the end of each yuga. I presume by this he means the Chatur Yuga cycle. and that means at the end of Kali Yuga, he's giving these names as names of Kalki in particular. So this is inconceivable. But anyway, we just accept it. How do we accept it? On the basis of Pramana, Shastra Pramana. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment about this, please, if at all. All right, we'll finish there. Hare Krishna.